Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are the co-chairs for the last session of this morning, of the whole event. My name is Humberto Monardes. I am professor at McGill University, the Department of Animal Science, the Faculty of Agriculture and Environmental Sciences.
Would you like a short introduction for you?
Yeah. Yeah. So my a little misunderstanding, which I should correct right away. No, it's because he was going to say.
Let's keep it.
Okay, I'd like to introduce my co-chair because he deserves that. He's the president of the General Council of Agricultural Development in Rabat, Morocco. Mohamed Aikadi is currently the president of the General Council of Agricultural Development. I should make a pause just to say a few things. Being a chair is a real challenge. You know, because all kind of things happen in the moment. Last phone calls, washrooms, things like that. So you have to learn from these lessons. Mohamed Aikadi is a president of the General Council of Agricultural Development of Morocco. The council is a high-level policy think tank of the Minister of Agriculture and Fishery in Morocco. He was also Secretary General of the Ministry. Previously, as Director General of the Irrigation Department, he was in charge of the development and implementation of the National Irrigation Program. He was the chief agricultural negotiator of the free trade agreement between Morocco and the United States. Aikadi chairs the technical committee of the Global Water Partnership. He was governor and founding member of the World Water Council and president of the organizing committee of the first World Water Forum held in Marrakech in 1997. He's the honorary vice president of the Internal Commission on Irrigation and Drainage and vice president of its Moroccan National Committee. He's a member of Hassan II Academy of Science and Technology. He serves as a member of the consortium board of CGIAR and the board of advisors of the World Agricultural Forum. He's professor at the Institute of Agronomy and Veterinary Medicine Hassan II, Rabat. He's the author of several publications in the fields of irrigation, water management, and agriculture and rural development. Dear colleague, please.
Thank you, Humberto, for this introduction. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to co-chair this session with you. I would like to open up our discussion in this session by a very, very brief remark. It is the third time that I participate in the McGill conference. And truly, for me, these conferences have been a space of intellectually stimulating discussions. But they were also a space, in my view, of convergence on many points, issues, methodologies, processes, and so on. I believe that throughout these conferences, we have underlined the strong consensus on the nature and scope of the food and nutrition security challenge. So let me, as I've been listening yesterday and also to the opening conference, try to paraphrase this challenge. We need to reliably produce increasing supplies and more varieties of food. We heard about millet yesterday. Mainly through higher yields, using less water. We had the China experience. But not only less water, but other resource inputs in an environmentally friendly manner and at a reasonable and affordable price for consumers. This challenge must be met as climate changes and as almost every input to the food production, processing, and consumption chain increases in cost. And in my view, this can only be done by increasing productivity. Prabhu stressed this yesterday. By mobilizing technology in all kinds of agriculture and mainly smallholder sector. And this is the topic of our session, and also achieving much better coordination, cooperation, and partnership among societal actors, farmers, market operators, regulators, and consumers. I think that by coordinating their efforts, actors can mitigate risks, leverage their contributions, and build on each other's competencies for sustainable agricultural growth. So this is what we will be discussing this morning, and over to you again.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mohammed. He has led me with the pleasure of introducing the speakers and controlling their time too. Our first speaker in this panel, which is quite a challenging panel, you know, and I'm going to explain you at the end why. That you will realize that. Our first speaker is very dear, especially dear to me in the sense that in my professional life, Richard Doyle. Richard Doyle was born and educated in Montreal, Quebec. Today he's the executive director of Dairy Farmers of Canada. I would say one of the strongest farmers associations, you know, in which has managed through the years to take control of the market, empower their farmers with the vision of provide Canadian consumers with dairy products of high quality, equilibrating the whole dairy chain and improving the life of all the participants, of all the members of the dairy chain, from the farmers to the consumers. Canadians are happy. I saw you yesterday eating dairy products and you were all smiling. Richard was educated in Montreal, yes, where he obtained his Bachelor of Science degree at the University of Montreal. He began his career with Dairy Farmers of Canada in 1976 and 10 years later became the executive director. As executive director of Dairy Farmers of Canada, Richard's primary focus has always been on defending the interests of Canadian dairy farmers, a task accomplished to a large extent by lobbying the federal government on industry-related issues. Dairy production research, federal regulations, eradication of diseases, animal health and welfare, environmental standards, pricing, supply management. I tend to drift, you know, when I read these words. International trade and several other issues impacting farmers. In 1994, Richard's responsibility expanded to include product promotion, marketing, nutrition, and communication with producers and the Canadian dairy industry. Over his career, Richard has also been actively involved in international organizations, including the International Dairy Federation and the International Federation of Animal Agricultural Producers, IFAP. Over the past three decades, he held various positions with IDF, both at the international level and within the Canadian National Committee. In 2008, he was elected president of the International Dairy Federation. And he is here in capacity of all this representation that he has held for several years. I feel tempted to say things about I think I feel challenged by the previous co-chairs, you know, that were so close to their speakers. But I realized that I don't need to compete with them. But I'll go slowly on this. Richard, please, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Umberto. I was tempted to show you a one-minute card. Good morning, everyone. Pleasure to be here. This is a great conference. I'm really enjoying myself. We are to deal with the role of societal actors, and I'm going to deal with it from both the International Dairy Federation standpoint and the Dairy Farmers of Canada standpoint. And actually, both organizations are not that much involved into developmental projects and dealing with food security per se. But nonetheless, we are, if you want, involved in some of it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. And I want to take some time as well, based on what I've heard over the last 2 years, to give you, 2 days, sorry, to give you a bit of my take over the issues, mostly from a price volatility standpoint, and I'll do that at the end. So I'll go quickly from the beginning. Now, the International Dairy Federation is over 100 years old, and it's an international organization that regroups producers, processors, suppliers, educational institutions, scientific organizations, standard-making organizations, governments, of course. So it's multi-stakeholders of anybody who have an interest within the dairy industry. But it is a scientific and technical organization. It is a non-political organization. It's basically interesting in progressing in terms of knowledge and science and standards and so on. We have 1,200 experts that all work voluntarily in this work. We currently have 111 work projects, and these are technical and scientific documentations or development of standards or methods of analysis that we work with ISO and so on. We have 9 areas of work, and we cover the whole spectrum of what you would expect in an agricultural commodity, anywhere from animal health and welfare, farm management, but also processing techniques, laboratory techniques, nutrition and health, economics, marketing, and so on. Now, the example I want to use is something that is quite not announced yet. It's actually in the process, but this is something that, as president of the past 4 years of IDF, I was involved with. And I thought it would be a good example of how an organization that doesn't have in its mission developmental work necessarily has nonetheless contributed with other actors in trying to do something. So I'm going to talk about the Global Agenda of Action. It has different names. The Livestock Dialogue, which is the website, is what it's often referred to. It's also referred to as the multi-stakeholder platform for the development of the livestock sector. And what it is, it's not an FAO project, but it's actually being provided so far the Secretariat of the FAO, by the Secretary of the FAO, in collaboration as well, because the thing is co-chaired by the World Bank. And it regroups civil societies, producers, processors, research institutions, governments, of course, into one platform and trying to say, okay, we recognize that the livestock industry will have to evolve over the years, looking at the food security and the requirements for additional food. What can we do together and trying to focus on the single agenda, so that we actually focus our energy not on our respective field, but together so that we're complementary and effective? Now, sorry, I was going to go back to this because it's a mouthful. I was going to read this, but for time purposes, I won't. But if you have a quick look at this, what it is, it's a mouthful. And the reason it is if you bring all these different actors, societal actors, together, everybody is going after one element. And we all have a different piece. So when as you create this global agenda, you have to be comprehensive of covering the interests of all the different players. And that makes it a very interesting discussion. We've been at this for 2 years. We started in the spring of 2011, and it's not yet launched. It will be launched, if everything goes well, in Nairobi next January. And at that point, there will be an announcement for having other actors joining the core group that has been created, and there will be projects oriented, and I'll talk to you a little bit about what we've done over the last little bit more than a year and a half. And we've identified three areas of focus altogether. One is bridging the efficiency gap, restoring value to grassland, and reducing discharge. And what I like to do is, and you can find all kind of information on this website, thelivestockdialogue.org. But let me go through these areas of focus. First one is bridging the efficiency gap. Now, the rationale is that closing a big efficiency gap with existing technology brings larger environmental, economic, and social gains than incremental advance at the technological frontiers. So that's the rationale. Now, you can't change what you can't measure. I think we've heard that today and yesterday. And all of these areas also have an element of the metrics on how are you going to measure your performance in trying to attack this particular issue. In this particular case, for the bringing of the efficiency gap, there's a parallel FAO partnership that has been created with organizations like IDF, with organizations like the International Meat Secretariat, the Egg Council, which is trying to basically, in the livestock industry, establish benchmark for environmental measurement of the livestock supply chains all together rather than we all do it by commodity. We've already done it in IDF for dairy products, but there is a relationship with the meat side, for example, that we need to basically assess and ensure that we all have the same metrics. Now, one of the projects we're looking on bridging the efficiency gap is actually a project in Kenya, not developed, so don't ask me too much of the details because we're in the process of looking at the feasibility of it. And what that is basically looking at where the carbon trade can actually be a source as you gain efficiency in the production, where you could actually self-sustain activities through the carbon trade. And that's what this particular project is about. The second one is restoring value to grassland. The rationale for that is grazing land, if appropriately managed and enabled to institutional and policy change, which I think Bruce will basically talk about, can provide large resource benefits in the form of carbon sequestration, protection and provision of water services, and biodiversity protection. Now, the carbon finance and other forms of payment for environmental services could equally be key in connecting people and production systems in areas that have often been neglected to opportunities to raise productivity and enhance livelihoods. Now, one of the pilots that we're looking at in this particular area, there's actually two. There's one which is on a sustainable grazing project in China, and there's another one on restoring grassland, which is with Uruguay. And all these projects are being, there's our concept right now, so they're being developed, and hopefully in January we'll be able to announce something more. And go for getting donors. That the whole point about this is that you're going to have something real concrete on your agenda and come up with a very specific projects that the multi-stakeholder supports and then get donors to actually finance them and oversee, provide oversight for it. Quickly, the towards a zero discharge rationale, nutrients and energy are only partially converted by the animals. And 50%, sometimes more, of the nutrients and about 30% of the energy are excreted and often lost to the environment, leading to nutrient overloads and gas emissions. This area of focus aims at recycling and recovering nutrients and energy contained in animal manure, particularly from intensive and confined livestock operations. One of the pilot we're looking in there is actually a cooperation between farmers organizations and public, private, and civil societies in Vietnam. It's also on a dairy, it's a dairy pilot project, looking at co-financing, price incentives, labeling that we heard about yesterday in legislation. So these are an example of where an organization that is only scientific and technical actually is trying to contribute with other stakeholders in doing something concrete. I want to say a few words about the FC, although Umberto said quite a bit. It is a dairy farmer organization. It is financed by milk producers, and we do research, and we have a vision on sustainable industry. And what I find interesting in this context today is that when you look at our mission, or our vision rather, outside the fact that we have our vision of working within the context of supply management, but you look at the rest, it would apply to any countries, whether you develop or developing. Canadian dairy farmers strive to produce safe, nutritious food in an economically, socially, environmentally sustainable way to the benefit of Canadian society. And you can transpose that in just about any farmer organization, I would suspect, whether they're there or not is not the issue. They should all, as a vision, try to achieve this. I'm going to skip this. And so I'm going to go right to this. A couple of comments that I thought was interesting about the discussion yesterday in particular. Price volatility is increasing. Not the peaks and valleys, we just have as many peaks and valleys, but the amplitude of those peaks and valleys is increasing, and this is over 20-some years. And what you see is the well price of dairy products. This is the U.S. farm price. I'm using this because the U.S. farm price is basically relating back to the world price. So this is farm price, and the red one is Canadian farm price. And you can see what has happened. Now, in 2007, you got this is an index from 1990, so you see 180 or close to 180%. So you're basically paying 80% more than what the farmers were being paid, 80% more than what they were paid more than 20 years before, or close to 20 years before. Not necessarily out of normal. And in fact, one of the comments I wanted to make is food prices are low. They're not high. I've heard a lot about high food prices. Food prices are not high. And the best example was Dr. Paulberg's slides where he was showing the crude oil, the all commodity agricultural and non-agricultural, and then the food prices index. And for 20 years, the index between food, crude oil, and all commodity were pretty much the same. And then in 2000, its crude oil started to go up, all commodities started to go up, and the food price followed the same peaks and valleys, but not the same level. Food price index remains significantly below the all commodity index or the crude oil index. So compared to any other aspects of commodities or commercial products, food prices remain low. And I understand why we say it's a high food price. If you're poor and you want to survive, food is your number one priority. Anything is expensive. But the problem with these world markets is that you're putting all the pressure, even though you're only trading 6%, even though the U.S. is highly protectionist, even though the U.S. is highly subsidized, you're putting a lot of pressure on the farmers. Imagine he was getting 80% more in 2007, but he was getting 20% less than the 1990 price 2 years later. Think about it. If you had a salary 1 year that is 80% more than 20 years ago, and the next year you have it 20% less than 20 years ago, would you take that job? I don't think so. I know I wouldn't. Goes so fast. So maybe we'll get back to this. But we're putting too much pressure on the farmers, is my point. far too much pressure. And what that shows is what the farmers have is we expect the retailers to follow the same thing so that the consumer can benefit from this world price variation. And of course they don't. Because not a retailer will actually shift, doubling the price 1 month and 6 months later cutting it by half. So what they do is they narrow down that margin, that amplitude. They might go 25% below, and then when the price drops really significantly, they're only going to go down maybe 5 or 10%. And what that does is that the producer's share of the consumer dollars is automatically reduced. In Canada, we have a high price. We're a high-cost country. But we have a highest share of the consumer dollars is going to the farmers, as it should be. And in many other countries, it's 40%, 30%. And when it gets close to 50%, it drops again. And that's what this volatility does. Now, to conclude, before I'm thrown out here, capacity. I thought it was useful to say, you know, like, I don't believe that the issue of food security is an issue of ability to produce. It's an issue of income, but it's not an issue of capacity. There's an issue of whether you can produce it without using as much resources and do it with less waste and all of these things, yes. But I was just looking at production per cow and then number of cows to produce pretty much the same amount of milk as we were producing back in 1970 in Canada. And the reality is that we've tripled the production per cow. And we reduced by 58% the number of cows to produce the same amount of milk, which has a huge impact in terms of environmental aspects and all that. And there's no reason to think that this will stop, because our average cow is about 9,000 kilos per year. The top cow is 24,000 kilos. So we're not yet at that level that we can say we cannot go from 9 to 19 in the next 40 years, for example, or 38 years, if you want. So increasing production by 100% is not a real difficult issue for us. Now, it's different when you're talking about developing countries because you're having a whole bunch of other things. But I just thought it would be useful to remind ourselves of this. And I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Richard.